Welcome to the Fretboard Journal Podcast. I am your host, Jason Verlinde. As always, that's John Rauhaus playing in the background. Today is a bonus episode, folks. We have big news. Fretboard Journal just added yet another podcast to its lineup. It's called Steel. It is a steel guitar podcast. I will include links in the show notes. This was the brainchild of one of our Fretboard Journal readers and community members, Matt Perpick. He's based in Brooklyn, New York, and he always wondered why there wasn't a great steel guitar podcast and decided to make one for us. He's going to put out an episode once a month. It's going to be legends, younger people, all points in between, as well as historians and instrument makers. He's got a great list already of folks to interview. And with his first episode, he interviewed Rich Hinman, who often plays with Adam Levy. He's played with Sarah Bareilles. He's played with Katie Lang. And this is an interview that really transcends instrument. Rich talks a lot about working with those artists. He talks a lot about finding your own voice. I really loved this interview, and I wanted to share a few minutes of it with you all. Roughly 12 minutes to be exact. So you can go check out this new podcast. I do just want to remind you all, we now put out a whole bunch of podcasts. And I know a lot of you out there listen to these podcasts. They're an important part of your week. And maybe some of you know the Fretboard Journal primarily through our podcasts, or maybe the videos we've put out on YouTube with Bill Frisell and other guitar luminaries. If you are one of those people and you want to support us, we now have a new Patreon page. It's just patreon.com/fretboard_journal. I'm going to be sharing episodes of the podcast ad-free on there. We're also going to be adding all sorts of bonus content as our page grows. It's a great way to support the Fretboard Journal and me and my family as we continue to grow our digital offerings, most of which are completely free. We are not one of these YouTube channels that has a bunch of affiliate ads or advertising. Most of what we put out is pure content that's unbiased and done out of a labor of love. And again, if you want to give back, I'll include a link to the Patreon where you can join us. Now, without further ado, here is the conversation that Matt Perpick had with Rich Hinman. It is a great one. I'm only including the first third of it. If you want to continue listening to it, head on over to Steel, the Steel Guitar Podcast, on any streaming platform or on fretboardjournal.com. Click on that subscribe button. And if you really love it, leave a review over on Apple Podcasts so that other Steel and non-Steel aficionados can go check it out.
And welcome to Steel, a podcast dedicated to the wonderful world of the steel guitar. I'm your host, Matt Perpick, a steel guitar player and nerd living in Brooklyn, New York. Together, we'll discover beautiful music, meet the players who push the steel guitar to new places, the builders who craft their instruments, and more. Today, I'm speaking with Rich Hinman. Rich is a professional pedal steel and guitar player based out of Salem, Massachusetts. He's played and recorded with artists like Katie Lang, Sarah Bareilles, Josh Ritter, Roseanne Cash, and Paula Cole. Rich also makes beautiful and adventurous instrumental music under his own name and with his band, Rich Hinman vs. Adam Levy. Rich's deep musicality, knowledge, touch, and tone give him a wholly unique voice on the pedal steel. The last time I saw him play, his bandmate Adam Levy said, "He's at the vanguard of his instrument. There's nobody doing what Rich does." What more can you say? Today, we discuss Rich's musical journey, how the pedal steel became part of his life, his experiences in the studio and on the road, and more. Here's our talk. Welcome, Rich. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me today. And thank you very much for having me in your awesome little studio.
Oh, well, thanks for asking me.
Yes. Yeah, so, Rich, I saw you played a solo pedal steel gig last night, which is not super common and I would say potentially pretty tough sledding. So what did you play and how did it go?
I played tunes. I mean, I guess it's the kind of situation where you could just improvise and you could just kind of play and play like ambiently. You could just play try to make very beautiful sounds and just kind of float. But that isn't really what I do. And so that's not really what I did. I actually just played tunes and played, you know, melodies, and sometimes just played the melody, and sometimes played the melody and then took a solo.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that I have a friend who books this series at the Omni Hotel in Boston,
mm-hmm.
of solo performers. And it's not something I would have necessarily like volunteered for. I don't think I'm going to like make that a big thing in my life, but it is an interesting challenge and I try to take it seriously.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I sort of feel like an instrumentalist should be able to, you know.
I actually feel that way too. I think that's why I said, yes, like I want to at least be able to play a song and make it compelling,
yeah.
on my own. Whether or not someone would listen for 2 hours is sort of another thing, but be able to sit there and play a tune. I've gotten some of that from, I've gotten more open to that. And I think the pandemic has something to do with that, hearing more people play solo.
Mm.
And my girlfriend is a great fiddle player, Jenna Moynihan, and she plays solo sometimes. And she's kind of a Celtic fiddle player. I mean, that's her background, although she does a lot of things. But in that world, people play solo. And it's not all... What I like is like people playing solo, and it's cool to play like out of time, but it's not all just like drifty, floaty. Like it can actually be rhythmic, and
yeah.
it can be like compelling in a physical sort of body way.
Mm-hmm.
So I when I play the pedal steel and I play solo, like it's not all in time, but I play a lot of it in time and try to make it feel good.
Yeah. And do you try to adapt your playing to sort of maybe, you know, the way Chet Atkins or Merle Travis would play rhythm and melody together? Do you try to sort of incorporate that, not exactly that style of playing, but that sort of idea?
There's a little bit of that for sure. And some of that is just intuitively you're not hearing something and you're kind of trying to fill it. But one thing that I've sort of taken from the fiddle thing and also from listening to other people play solo, like listening to people play solo clarinet or solo, is that like, if you play a compelling single line that's really in time, it doesn't necessarily need accompaniment. Like if it's rhythmically strong enough, it can kind of do the work on its own.
Hmm.
And that's hard to do. And I can't always do it. And I guess I would say like another place I've actually learned about this, and I sort of hate to admit this because for obvious reasons is honestly like playing on Instagram.
Hmm.
I've like actually learned something about playing by yourself and what it, you know, cause you'll play something and be like, and like think it was happening and then go and watch the little video that you just made and be like, nope.
Mm-hmm.
And often it's time stuff. Often it's like, you know, you're like when it's most compelling is when it feels the best usually.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's shift gears. Rich, tell me about maybe the start of your musical journey. What are your early formative musical memories?
I was like one of those kids that kind of like always wanted to be a musician and was just very early on like, this is my thing.
Hmm.
Even just like from an identity perspective. I mean, I like loved it also, but there was also a thing of like, when you're a kid and you're kind of like the kid, you know, there's like the kid who's like good at sports and they're like, this is my thing. I'm good at sports.
Yeah.
Like I was just like, this is what I do. And so I played, you know, I played piano. I think I must have started when I was like 6 or something like that. And then started playing guitar when I was like 9. And I really wanted to play guitar because it was like, you know, it was the 80s and I was like watching MTV and it just like was way cooler than playing piano.
Yeah.
like it really at that time it really made a difference. I wonder what I would do now. Like no one plays guitar, like on, you don't, like, I mean there is no MTV and like no one,
yeah,
I don't know what like kids are doing now, but probably it would definitely not be guitar. But at the time, like that was like the coolest thing.
Absolutely.
And they just like look cool and they feel cool. And like, you know, you can stand there or you could jump around or you can do stuff that you can't do playing a piano.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so I started playing guitar pretty early considering when most people play guitar. I started playing guitar at like 9. And my parents had me play classical guitar cause they were like, it was almost like a compromise. Like, okay, you can do it, but you have to like, whatever, learn to read music and stuff. And that was really good for me. So I did that for a couple of years. But my sort of non-classical guitar playing was actually pretty free form. You know, like I kind of just like listened to music and tried to figure stuff out. And so it was cool because I had this kind of like understanding of just like the world of notes and the world of written music and where a C was and all that kind of stuff. But also was exploring. I went from, you know, this is like, again, like this late 80s, I went from kind of like hair metal when I was like to like sort of like Metallica, you know, like it was that kind of stuff like very early on. And it was just kind of like, and then I got, when I was probably 12 or 11 or something, I got really into like Led Zeppelin and Jimi Hendrix. I mean, it's a pretty classic sort of trajectory.
Yep.
Got really into Led Zeppelin and Jimi Hendrix, especially those two things.
Mm-hmm.
And started listening to blues records because, or I guess I should say tapes, like cassette tapes, because there was also a very healthy music journalism world at that time. And so I was reading like Rolling Stone and, you know, wherever there was like whatever interviews or anything I could find with people like that. So I would learn about, you know, what they listened to when that Robert Johnson box set or what, I mean, it's really just two CDs, I think.
Yeah.
But when that thing came out, like that was a big deal and we got that. And like, I listened to that a lot. It was actually kind of a cool time.
Yeah.
And I saw some of those people too. Like I saw B.B. King. I saw Buddy Guy. I grew up in Sleepy Hollow, New York. And it's like basically contiguous with this town called Tarrytown. And there's a music hall, like a very old sort of vaudeville music hall there. It's called the Tarrytown Music Hall. And I got to be like an usher there. So I would just go to the shows. And so I saw Buddy Guy and I saw Sonny Rollins. It was cool. You know, it was just like, I think the late 80s and early 90s were just like a time when a lot of greats from the previous like half century were very much still around and playing and
vibrant.
And it was easy to see them.
Yeah.
I have no idea. Like, but it felt like it was more part of the culture, like going to see live music. Like my parents certainly did it all the time. And they would just be like, see in the paper that they're like, oh, so-and-so is playing. Like we saw some blues festival that was like B.B. King and Buddy Guy. And I think Johnny Winter, which seems like kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
But like, that was just like a thing that was happening. So anyway, I saw lots of that stuff and I was playing guitar the whole time. And I was in like jazz band in school, but jazz band was only, I went to like a Catholic high school. So jazz band was only like a small group because that there was just like a teacher who played jazz. So mm-hmm. he just got us together and we would play. And I would like sit in with this jazz band in Tarrytown and in like, I would go to like jazz jam sessions, which was still sort of a thing. And like, so I was trying to learn to play jazz.
Mm-hmm.
I went to a guitar camp that I went to for many years called the National Guitar Workshop that a lot of guitar players, I still am friends with a lot of people who went there or taught there.
Like yeah.
It had a pretty wide reach. And also there I got to see, you know, they had like special guests. I mean, the world of like, at least the kind of music that I got into by the time I was like 13 or 14 is pretty small and pretty accessible. You know, it's like, you're not gonna, if you're into like big giant pop music, you're not gonna see Rihanna at something.
Yes.
You know, like these people like float far, far above you.
Yes.
But if you're like a 14-year-old and you're really into like, you're like a budding jazz guitar player, you can definitely go see John Scofield and definitely talk to him and it's fine.
And say
like
hello.
He's really nice. It's totally cool. So yeah, I got to like meet Scofield and Jim Hall. Wow. And like, yeah, it was amazing.
Did they ask you to play for them?
Yeah, I played. That was part of the deal. I did like a duo with both of them.
Wow.
You know,
were you scared?
Yeah, kind of. But also like a little maybe like too dumb to be like really scared.
Yeah.
You know.
Like, of course.
It's great. Being young is great. You're just like, you're like, this is fine.
This is normal. This is normal. What life is.
This is what life is. And it's fine. And I am completely capable of doing this. And yes, on a level where this should be no problem.
Yes, I belong here.
I belong here. Yeah. And you're like, you do not. But it's okay.
All right. That was the first, I don't know, 12, 13 minutes of Rich Hinman talking to Matt Perpick on the Steel Podcast. Now go listen to the rest of it. It gets even better, folks. Trust me on this one. Thanks, as always, for tuning in. Thanks for all the kind words. Keep the emails coming to podcast@fretboardjournal.com. And we're going to have another installment of the Fretboard Journal Podcast in just a couple of days on Thursday. Till next time.